America. And indeed, we have congregated here at this time to celebrate a most treasured wellspring of contemporary music. It is the sound which historians in the far future might catalog under 20th century green-light emitting dial euphoric. But today the sound lives, and tonight assembled exclusively for your entertainment pleasure from the music capitals of this continent, this is the hard-working all-star show band of Joliet, Jake, and Elwood Blues. Ladies and gentlemen, these are the Blues Brothers.
Welcome to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast. I am your host, Scott White. And once again, I am joined by my good friend, introduce yourself, Mr. Sean Penalber.
Hey, friends and everyone listening. My name is Sean Penalber. I'm a local artist, collector, entertainer, musician. I do things.
Rock on tour. There's pretty much nothing that Sean doesn't do, and he doesn't do it well.
Except murder.
Yes, he murdered, he's been convicted for murder 3 times, because he just can't get it down. But speaking of murder, that was a horrible segue, we are going to talk about the Blues Brothers album, Made in America. And if any of you have remembered, Sean and I, we did the Blues CD, Have Love, Will Travel, and that had Dan Aykroyd and Jim Belushi on that CD. Well, we're looking at an original Blues Brothers recording. Made in America. It was released in December of 1980. So this came out the same year as the movie.
Yeah.
And I believe they were trying to cash in on the popularity of the movie with another album. Now, Sean, what is your knowledge or what do you know of the Blues Brothers?
I know that it's John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, backed by a fantastic revenue or collection of artists. And so the talent behind everyone is fantastic. I know that it was a Saturday Night Live thing. And I know about the movie, which is one of my favorites.
Have you heard any other Blues Brothers albums besides this one?
I haven't. I enjoy the soundtrack to the movie, very much so. And then besides Have Love, Will Travel, but again, that was Jim.
So before we start, what was your overall view of this album? This was their third album. So their first album was a Suitcase Full of Blues. And then their second album was the Blues Brothers soundtrack. And this was their third album. And this was their last live album with John Belushi. They released a Best of Blues Brothers in 1981, and then, of course, Belushi died in 82. So this is really the last album with John Belushi. And what were your thoughts on it?
I don't know. I kind of want to save him to the end for, like, a surprise.
Okay. Make it a surprise?
Yeah, well, after we review the whole thing.
Okay. Well, what we usually like to do, you and I, we go song through song.
Yeah.
And is that what you want to do this time?
Yeah.
All right. So we start off the album with Soul Finger.
Yeah.
Which is an instrumental. And so I will tell you this. In this album, since you haven't listened to the other two, Dan Aykroyd and the band is much more prominent on this album than the first two.
Really?
Yes. The first two albums are basically 95-96% of John Belushi singing. Oh, and wow. Aykroyd usually does a lot of background vocals. Now, I can't prove this. This was at the point in John Belushi's life where he was doing a lot of drugs. So I don't know if the concert was made that way to put less work on John Belushi, because this was the height of his drug addiction
at this point. I can see that.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so our first song is Soul Finger, an instrumental, and we get an introduction by Dan Aykroyd as Elwood Blues.
And so it's a mashup of Soul Finger and Funky Broadway. Soul Finger was a 1967 cover of the Barkays. And it goes into Funky Broadway when Dan is doing all the talking and the rundown and stuff. And that is a 1966 cover of Dyke and the Blazers, Funky Broadway.
Just a side note, Soulfinger is used in the movie Spies Like Us, starring Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase.
Oh, wow. Like in the beginning or just at some point?
No, it's at some point in the movie. It's actually at a weird point. Describing it out of context, Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase are in Russia. They're spying on these Russians who are listening to Soulfinger on a boombox. And Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase are pretending to be aliens. Take that scene out of context, and that's how Soulfinger is used in the movie Spies Like Us.
I need to watch that again.
Yeah.
As always, with my experience of Blues Brothers or with Have Love Will Travel, I think their intros are classy. Like, I really enjoy the intros of just, like, how they break things down. They're like, hey, welcome. Come on in. You know, we're going to have a show.
They make it really... This was recorded at an auditorium in Los Angeles. But you're right. The intros always make it a little more intimate, in my opinion. Even though it's a giant auditorium, it's like, hey, everybody, we're just here to have a good time and just listen to our music. And then, so our next song is called Who's Making Love? Basically, it is a song about this guy reminiscing, who's sleeping with my wife right now?
And not just that, like, it's about a guy who's out cheating himself, and then he's like, oh shit, someone's probably at home with my wife doing the same thing. And then vice versa. And it also breaks down, like, your wife is probably out cheating, and then who are you out? Having, you know, relationships with.
Yeah, it's a really wild song. Now, I will say, on a couple of these songs, and this is one of them, sometimes I had trouble hearing and understanding John Belushi when he was doing lead vocals.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And maybe it's my hearing, or actually, I did listen to this. You listened to this
on YouTube, I did it on YouTube, I believe. Yeah.
I listened to the actual... I have the album. I have the LP. So maybe the sound quality on the LP is not as good as it was on YouTube, but...
Or maybe your needle's getting thin.
Maybe my needle's. But this song, I had trouble... Now, I mean, I understood the song, but there was some... It's like, I really had to hunker down and listen to hear what he was saying.
I mean, but also, like you said, like, if this was at the height of his, you know, drug career, he could have been slurring or, you know, anything.
There's been tons and tons of stories how he was on stage and slurring. And maybe this was the best take, you know what I'm saying? yeah. Because this was recorded over a week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so I'm sure they put the best recordings of each one on here.
I can imagine, from what we were talking about like the, if I'm out, who's back at home with my wife? Like, people at the beginning of this concert listening to this song and being like, oh shit, like, I need to get home right now. Like, I don't know who my wife is with.
It's basically that's a phrase, people, I'm going to try to stop saying, basically. It's the cheater syndrome. Yeah. Or the liar syndrome. If you're a cheater, you think everybody is a cheater. And if you're a liar, you think everybody is a liar. So if you're out cheating, you're thinking that obviously my wife is out cheating, or vice versa, however that works.
Yeah. This was a 1968 Johnny Taylor cover.
And the band gets... There's a lot of solos throughout these songs, so the band really gets to shine in this album as well.
Yeah, which I enjoyed.
I enjoyed as well. And then the next song, we had the classic Do You Love Me?
Yes. Do You Love Me with Mother Popcorn by James Brown. And
Yes.
For those of you listening, Do You Love Me was a 1962 Contours cover, and The Mother Popcorn, or You Have Got to Have a Mother for Me, is a 1969 James Brown cover. I recognized this immediately. Do You Love Me, that's a classic hit.
I recognized it immediately. A lot of these songs I did not recognize immediately.
Yeah,
like
same.
You do. These are more obscure songs than what appear on the first two Blues Brothers albums.
Yeah, and I wrote about that kind of later, about like how it seemed that like some of these tracks are just like, oh man, we're running out of blues tracks to cover. Let's just do this one.
And I believe the song Do You Love Me was, John Belushi didn't change the sex because it was originally written for a woman. And so she calls herself her and refers to him as, you know, the one who's not requiting her love. And John Belushi didn't change the pronouns. He sang it the way the song was written. He didn't change it to make it like he was the one who was rejected and now he's coming back, like the song. Because the song is like, yes. He didn't change it. He didn't make it about himself. He just sang the song the way it was written, which I thought was cool.
Yeah. And also, again, back with the transition of like two songs together, I thought it was an amazing mashup and a great transition from the band from one song into the next. And I really enjoyed this piece. I actually felt it could have been longer. Like, I wish they had drawn it out.
It's a relatively short album.
Yeah, super short. 30 minutes.
Right, yeah, 15 minutes aside. Now, the next song, Guilty, this is one of those things that has become poignant because we know what happened to John Belushi.
Yeah.
And first of all, the song has a great intro by Dan Aykroyd introducing his brother, Jake. You know, and he's like, Jake's going to get intimate with you people. And then John Belushi starts singing about drinking and using cocaine.
Baby, yeah, I've been drinking, and I shouldn't come by, no. But I found myself in trouble, darling, and I had no. Got some whiskey from a barman. I got some cocaine from my friends. I gotta keep on moving, baby.
And it's just like, wow. When he was singing that, he was
bearing his soul.
He was bearing his soul, yes.
And even in the articles that I was reading, like the Wikipedia page and stuff, apparently this song had a deep biographical meaning to John Belushi, and he wanted to do it. And so that's why this was on the album. And another thing I noticed was like, when he sings about the part from getting cocaine from his friends, it's like the second line in the song. Everyone just goes wild. The audience just like supports and cheers him, which is exactly not what he needed.
The audience goes apeshit when he says, I got some cocaine.
And it's just like, that's the sort of drug praise that led to his death. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
And it's a shame.
Absolutely. It is a shame. I miss John Belushi.
Yeah. Well, this was a 1974 Randy Newman cover, and any Randy Newman song, you're going to get some good piano in there, and some lovely poetic lyrics.
Now, speaking of piano, so Paul Schaefer is on this album. He actually produces this album. And Paul Schaefer was not in the Blues Brothers movie or on the Blues Brothers soundtrack because he had a scheduling conflict. Yeah. I believe he was doing Gilda Radner's Broadway show at that time.
Oh, wow.
So he was not on. So he came back for this album. However, they kept Murphy Dunn, who played keyboard in the movie. So they had dual keyboards on this album. They had Paul Schaefer and Murphy Dunn both playing keyboards. I thought that was cool that they didn't kick Murphy out of the band just because Paul Schaefer came back. They kept him in the fold.
The more talent, the merrier. And honestly, like, I can't get enough keyboards in like a good music band. Like, you could have, why not 10 keyboards? You know, like, as long as no one's overpowering each other, like, you can get some amazing things.
Now,
yeah, this was a nice slow track.
It was very nice. It takes it down. Belushi is telling you what's going on in his life right now.
Yeah.
The next three songs, we'll hit them all. But it goes, for side one, it goes from Guilty to the Perry Mason theme to Riot at Cell Block Number 9. And to me, this is like the trilogy within a franchise. And what I mean was, it's like there's like 7 or 8 Star Trek movies. But Star Trek 2, 3, and 4 can be seen as a trilogy. It's also with the Friday the 13th movies. There's like 10 or 11 of those. But Friday the 13th, 2, 3, and 4 could be a trilogy because they all have connecting tissue. These three songs have connecting tissue. It's like they're telling a story where John Belushi proclaims he's guilty, and then Dan Aykroyd gets on there and says, I need to get him a lawyer, and they go into the Perry Mason theme, the TV show Mason. Yeah. And
that's
then,
a great connection.
And then the last one, evidently he gets convicted because now he's in cell block number 9 starting a riot.
Yeah.
So it was a nice little story with songs. That's and the way I saw it.
That is a great point and also adds to the effect of having the LP yourself, like, on the record. Because, I mean, with the YouTube, it just, like, plays right the way through, and you don't really notice that. But that is such a good halfway point, and then starting off the other side with Green Onions. That's a great split.
It is. But let's talk about... So it goes from Guilty to the Perry Mason theme. Because that show ran in the 50s.
1957 to 1966, I believe.
66. So that means the last episode was 14 years ago when this album came out.
I think this was one of my favorite tracks on the album. But this is where Dan Aykroyd comes in and replaces John.
On lead vocals, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Aykroyd finishes out the album, or finishes out the side. Belushi does Guilty, and then Aykroyd does an intro to the Perry Mason theme, and we get the great band, and then it goes into Riot and Cell Block Number 9. I really enjoy Riot and Cell Block Number 9.
On Perry Mason theme, they have... overall, I think that is the highlighting track of the saxophone and the horns on that track. They kill it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also enjoy them doing another theme song, like Rawhide or the Peter Gunn theme that they did in the movie.
Correct, yes.
And so it was another good throwback.
I like that they didn't do what was popular at the time. They went back and they grabbed the Perry Mason theme, which fits perfectly in between Guilty and Riot and Cell Block Number 9.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that does add a lot more effect to it.
And then we have Riot and Cell Block Number 9, where the band is singing. And that sort of gave me a Minnie the Moocher feel, like when the whole band was going, hidey, 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 hi.
Yeah. Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, but I got that feel from this song when they were singing the chorus Riot and Cell Block Number 9 behind Aykroyd.
Yeah, all together. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it was, yeah. It took me a minute. I got, it's like, that reminds me of something. I can't place it. And then I remembered, oh yeah, Minnie the Moocher.
Well, this is a 1954 The Robins cover. And my thoughts on this were, I wrote, holy shit, they stopped this riot with dynamite and nerve gas. Which is insane to think about.
And that song was written in 1954.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I'm sure they may have used dynamite and nerve gas in prison riots.
These blues songs can sometimes be batshit crazy. If you just,
absolutely.
If you just listen to the lyrics. Remember back on Have Love Will Travel, that Ray Charles song where he's putting chlorophyll on $10 bills? It's like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. Different times.
Different times. You know, this one is like, we're stopping a riot with dynamite and nerve gas. It was
pre-surveillance state. Before, like, video cameras were everywhere.
Right.
But then, you got the next side of the album, starting off with Green Onions, which is a absolute classic hit.
Booker T.
Yeah, Booker T and the MGs. And this was original material from Steve Cropper and Donald Duck Dunn, who were in the MGs.
Correct. So they got to play their own original material.
Yeah, which was really nice. And they both kind of shined, though at the same time, they both shine with the keyboard and the guitar, but I kind of expected a little more from them. Like, it just kind of seemed like, here's the song, we're gonna, you know, like, amp up our parts just a little bit, which I was like, man, y'all could have, like, gone so hard on this.
This is your song, this is your baby, yeah. Now, the weird thing during this song, while it's playing, Aykroyd goes off on this political rant.
American propaganda.
Yes.
This continent, North America, is the stronghold. This is where we're going to make our stand in this decade. Yeah, people. I got something to say to the State Department. I say, take that archaic Monroe Doctrine and that Marshall Plan that says we're supposed to police force the world and throw it out! And stay home for the next 10 years, people! Stay right here in North America and enjoy the music and culture that is ours! Yeah, I got one more thing to say. I'm just talking about the music, people, and what it does to me. And that is, as you look around the round world, you go to Soviet Union or Great Britain or France, you name any country, everybody is doing flips and twists just to get into a genuine pair of American blue jeans and to hear this music, and we got it all here in America, the land of the Chrysler 430 cubic inch engine.
He's like, let's get rid of the Monroe Doctrine, and he's basically saying, let's not help out any other countries in the world, let's stay in America. And yeah. Consume, consume, consume. And party, party, party.
Because we have blue jeans and the Chrysler 440 cubic inch engine. And those are his main points.
We have blue jeans and car. Well, you know, Aykroyd is a huge motorhead. He loves automobiles. So.
Oh, okay.
Let's get rid of the Monroe Doctrine. I'm like, what?
And it's like, again, like I said, it's like, that was so disappointing because it's like, Duck Dunn and Steve Cropper could have done, like, gone ham on solos, you know? They could have gone back and forth, even, like, just, like, killing it. But they put in this vocal interlude of American propaganda, and it's just like, okay.
But the next song we go into is a song called I Ain't Got You.
I Ain't Got You, which is a 1955 Calvin Carter cover.
Now, the first time I heard this song, it was sung by Andrew Dice Clay in his movie, The Adventures of Ford Fairlane. That's where I knew this song from.
Ford Fairlane. 1990. Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, this song is basically just like, There are things in my life. I got mediocre people and stuff all around me, but I ain't got you.
This is sort of the opposite of Who's Making Love. In Who's Making Love, he has somebody and he's cheating on her. On this one, he doesn't have her and he wants her. There's a line in the where he's got a stomach full of different pills. Yeah. I think he's just doing everything to cope, not having her. That might and be that, the prequel to Who's Making Love. It's like, I ain't got you, but then I get you, and now who's making love to you? Because I'm out making love to somebody else because I ain't got her, or something.
That makes sense. But also just that stomach full of pills line. Another just like classic blues line of, okay, different time.
It's a great line. It goes, I got a pocket full of crumpled bills. I got a stomach full of different pills. I got Fanny Fox and Wilbur Mills.
That right there.
Who the hell is Fanny Fox? Do you know Fanny Fox? I have no idea who Fanny Fox and Wilbur Mills is. I probably should have looked it up.
I had to look it up, and it was apparently, she was like a model, and it was like a whole political scandal where she jumped out of a limo into like a river because they were like, you know, doing the dirty behind the scenes, and then she came out and she became famous and everything. And it caused this whole political scandal. But wow. I don't get the line, though. I still don't get it. It's like, I have these two things. It's like, oh, okay. Are you looking for a rhyme or something?
But anyway. I mean, I enjoy... Whenever I recognize a song, I'll admit, if I recognize a song, chances are I will immediately enjoy it more than a... I'll enjoy it quicker. It's like, oh, yeah. I know that song. And I knew that song.
That nostalgic factor.
The nostalgic factor, yes. And something I will say, once again, comparing this album to Have Love Will Travel, Have Love Will Travel is a party album from start to finish.
Yes.
This one is not. This one has a different variety of blues songs. You've got your fast tempo, like you said, you got your mellow, you got your mellow Guilty. There's a lot of Dan Aykroyd's. Speeches in this. So it's a variation of blues songs. It's not, this would not be a party album, in my opinion. Yeah, like Have Love Will Travel.
This is something you might put on, like, in the car, maybe, you know.
And, like, depending on what mood you're in, this might be an album where you might skip a song. Like, if Guilty came on and you're like, you know what, I can't really deal with that right now. I might want to skip it.
Yeah, I can see that. It's like, triggering.
Yeah, a lot. That's an excellent word. A lot of songs might be triggering, whereas Have Love Will Travel is just a fun album from start to finish.
Yeah.
And then our next song on the album is From the Bottom. Boop, boop, boop.
From the Bottom.
From the Bottom.
That's all I know about this character, is that she's from the bottom, and I still don't even know what that is really referring to. My only guess is, like, she's from the bottom of, like, lower class or something? Like,
that's what I'm guessing. The lower rung of the ladder.
From the bottom. From the bottom. From the bottom. From the east, she's not from the west. I'm so crazy about my baby, I doesn't wish she wears a dress. From the bottom, from the bottom.
The lowest rung on the ladder of society.
Or like low-hanging fruit, maybe?
Maybe. But you are correct. I mean, like you said, a lot of these songs, if you listen to them, you can read into them, and you can find a really interesting story. I really didn't get this one. I mean, this I like the chord from the bottom. I'll be singing that, but that's about all I took away from the song is the chorus.
Well, that's the whole song, is just from the bottom.
From the bottom. Boop.
There's maybe like four other lines. This was a 1954 Sonny Boy Williamson and his House Rockers cover. I could see that bopping in 1954, though.
I could see that bopping in 1954, but I don't want to say this might have been my least favorite song of the album, but I guess this is the song that I took the least amount away from. The song didn't really give me anything. I enjoyed it, but it didn't give me anything. All the other songs, even if I didn't like it, it was
kind of like filler. It's like, hey, what's going to get us to 30 minutes?
Right. It made me, like that Green Onions, even though that was just a wild diatribe by Aykroyd about blue jeans and cars, it's like, that was, like, it kept me interested. It's like, what? Yeah, and this one was, like, you're right. Yeah, it's filler. It's like, we need to get, what else can we put on here to get our album to 30 minutes? So we can justify selling an album.
Yeah. Or doing a show. And then last but not least,
Going Back to Miami. This is a party song. This is a party song. And I'm glad they ended the album with this song, because this is a rockin' blues song that they ended, that they ended the album with.
It's a good closing song, because it's like, all right, we're going back to Miami. This was great.
Yes.
It's been good.
This was the only song from this album that made it to the Greatest Hits album. A majority of the Greatest Hits album is from their first and second album. This is the only song from Made in America that made it to their Greatest Hits album that came out the next year.
I think if I recall, this is the one. Yeah, this is the only single that it peaked at number 108 and.
Yeah.
It cracked the top 40 at number 39.
I enjoy this song.
Yeah, this was a good closing track. It's got the drummer. I can't remember his name. Steve Jordan. He kills it on this track. He's got a great drum breakdown in it.
So this is not the drummer from the Blues Brothers movie. They let him go.
And but he killed it.
He killed it, yeah. They all killed it. That was... In all the interviews you see about the Blues Brothers, is the one thing that Belushi and Aykroyd wanted was a fantastic band behind them.
Yeah, they were so solid.
And this has got to be one of the most solid bands ever. I mean, they're all solid, they all hit it, they all kill it.
And you can really tell on this album, it's like, it's just so... I the best word I can think of is solid. Like, literally, like, from front to back, it's like, you don't hear any, like, it's so clean, you know?
Well, they've been working together for years at this point, so not only are they a great band, they've worked together enough where now they're meshing with each other.
The only thing I was disappointed about with the ending of this track and the album was there's no closer. Like, it ends with, like, the sound of fireworks, and that's it. Like, one shot of firework, and then it's just over.
Yeah. Yeah, it ends abruptly. Yeah. It ends very abruptly.
And so, and I would expect, like, you know, like, they always have the intro, like, hey, we're the Blues Brothers, thanks for having us. I would kind of, either them playing out, like, longer, you know, or doing a whole, like, outro, like, hey, thanks for coming out, blah, 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 we'll see you next time, yada, yada. But no, nothing. Maybe it was, like, a studio time issue. Maybe it just costed more money for them to drag it out.
I wouldn't know anything about that. And now that we know that this would have been their final album as that entity, I would have liked a solid ending.
Yeah.
You know, just to have that on record, which unfortunately we don't have. I mean, nobody was expecting Belushi to die a couple of years later, but you know, now that we know what we know, to have this a concrete ending, that would have been nice.
Yeah, it just fizzles out. It's kind of, I guess, a life metaphor, you know.
Yeah.
It's not always a great ending.
Now, I do want to say that the album cover, the back cover, was designed by Belushi's wife, Jackie. Judith. Judith Belushi. So she designed the album and the album the album cover for this album. Wow. How many times can I say album in one sentence?
As many as you want, buddy.
As many as I can. The most hilarious thing about this back image is you see the band all together, and they have cans of Coke, and it's like, you know there was probably a lot of drugs being passed around in real life in this back room. Yeah, nobody's drinking Coke, you know, and having and they got like a salad buffet. It's like, okay, yeah. I see what you're doing.
Yeah, there I see him right there in the middle, John.
The funniest part is everybody's got a casual look on their face, but Mr. Fabulous, I can't think of his name. I can only think of his nickname. There's one guy looking directly at the camera. Nobody else is looking at the camera. Everybody else has a casual look on their face like, hey, what's going on? And there's this one guy.
It's like he looks guilty for picking up the grape off the table or whatever he's eating.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no. Also, the horn player's looking at the...
Oh, yeah. So there's two people. Yeah, there's a guy at the buffet table. He's sort of looking off. He's not looking directly at the camera. But there's one guy, the guy next to Belushi, who's looking dead on in the camera.
He looks like he's posing for an album. While everyone else is just acting disinterested. And they're gambling right there, right on the table.
Yes, they're gambling. Ooh, I think I see a $2 bill, too. Yeah, there's like ones and twos and fives. And But that's the album, Blues Brothers, Made in America. And you said you wanted to save your thoughts to the end.
Yeah, my overall. So...
Overall
Here's
thoughts.
What I
this
thought.
This is going to be a relatively short podcast because, as we both said, this is not a particularly long album.
Yeah, and there's not much to talk about with the songs. They're too short, you know, and simple.
But your overall thoughts. Sorry to interrupt.
I thought it was mediocre. I'm not going to lie.
I was going to say I agree. This is the weakest out of all the albums.
Yeah, like if I paid to see this in concert. Like, because they did a North American tour of this, I'd be underwhelmed. Because, I mean, it's nothing really spectacular. There's like, three songs that, like, I really enjoyed. But I could only really justify this if, like, they were the opening act to something even bigger. And so, again, like I mentioned earlier, I guess they were running out of songs to, like, cover. And it kind of felt like that. But, like, I also feel... Again, they could really amp these songs up with the talent that they had, but they didn't. And, like, maybe, again, I'm guessing, like, it was an issue of, like, because recording time and studio time, that costs a lot of money. And so, like, maybe they didn't want to do, like, flashy solos and everything, just save on that. But they totally could have. Like, they could have, like, really amped this album up, but it was just going through the motions. And so it was kind of like... Yeah, we're the Blues Brothers. Here's some songs.
Right, I think later. it might have been a money grab.
Yeah,
being on the coattails of the movie.
Yeah, just like you said, like it came out the same year, and so it was just like, hey, we made a movie, we got to do something, and because we're a band, you know, we're a real band, not just a movie.
Right, it's the monkey syndrome. We're a real band. But you know this had to be, it was put out in December of 1980, and I believe it was recorded in August of 1980. So if this is coming out after the movie, it probably had a rushed production, which didn't help the album as well. Yeah. But I 100% agree with you. I would suggest, listen, well, you know, you can hear the soundtrack on the movie, but I would recommend their first two albums, or, you know, The Best of the Blues Brothers is a fantastic album. This is, like you said, middle of the road, mediocre. It's got some good stuff in there, but I would not go back to this album before. I mean, I'd go back to their other albums first before I would even consider going back to this album.
Yeah. And maybe, like, I don't know, maybe it was like they were like kind of running their thing, you know, like, it was a thing of the times, like, hey, we've been together for so long, like, we're running out of stuff to do. Maybe it was John Belushi's, you know, interference of like the drug problems and stuff, and the band that stuff breaks bands apart, you know. And so like I don't
because
have an
if
immediate
this came
answer.
Out, if this came out in the tales of the Blues Brothers, the movie, we have tons of stories of Belushi doing cocaine on the Blues Brothers movie. Now, okay, I'm going to say something. On the back cover of this album, there is a security card there called Smokey Wendell. And Smokey Wendell was a big part of Belushi's life. They hired him, Dan Aykroyd and his wife Judith, hired him to keep drugs away from John. And he's actually in the picture on the back of the album.
Yeah, he's right in the back, just has his arms crossed. And he's looking at John.
Yeah, he's looking at John. He's keeping an eye on John.
That's so sad, really. Like,
yeah. Ugh. But there were so many stories of him doing drugs on the Blues Brothers, the movie. I find it hard that he could have become clean just in that short amount of time between when that movie ended and they started, you know, production and touring on this album. I just find it impossible to believe that he was even remotely clean at that point.
And then also just being on tour, like I can only imagine that that's going to amplify drug use and alcohol use and other things.
Well, not only that, but Belushi was also a heavy eater and a heavy smoker. That doesn't help you. That doesn't help you either, even though those things are both legal. And actually, drinking was legal, but I mean, he overdid. But smoking and eating, I mean, he overindulged in both of those as well. And if you're a singer and you're a heavy smoker, and you got to do those moves every night, that's going to wear on you too.
Yeah, I bet it was just a pool of sweat every night.
I'm sure he was. I'm sure this was the only exercise he was getting.
Oh, woof.
At that point.
Yeah.
Just to go off on a tangent here, another fallen icon, Keith Moon, the drummer of The Who.
Yeah.
They would say the only exercise he got was playing drums. And they said he played drums so intensely that, like, after the show, he would take his shirt off and he could wring the sweat off and it would fill 2 pint glasses.
Yeah, I believe that. He went ham on those drums.
And they said that was actually good for him because that was the only exercise that he got. When they stopped touring for a while, he put on a ton of weight because he wasn't getting the drumming from the exercising. I can't help but feel this is the same thing with Belushi here, where his dancing around and performing might have been the only real exercise he was getting at some time. Now, I know between after the Blues Brothers and his movie, he did a movie, The Continental Divide. He got some trainers, he got clean for a while, and he fell back into it. But there was a time he was clean, but I believe this was before he straightened up his act for that first time. And I believe, like I said, either of us can't confirm this, but I do believe the band was fighting Belushi and his drug use on this album.
I mean, they got to do something, like, or you just see a brother just degrade themselves, you know, like deteriorate. That had to have been such a sad experience.
Had to be.
And also from someone who's so talented as well.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to see anybody destroy themselves with drugs, but somebody like that, who was just a beacon in comedy at the time, that everybody loved him. And what sucked was even the people. You were talking about when we were talking about the song Guilty, when he mentions cocaine and everybody cheers. People were just giving Belushi cocaine like it was candy.
Yeah. And that's so terrible.
But enough of the sad shit. Final recommendations for this album. What do you recommend to our listening audience about this shot?
I recommend giving it a listen. There's definitely some classics on here. But overall, like, You're probably not going to come back to it unless, like, maybe a few tracks you would save, like, on your playlists. But I definitely don't think you're going to listen to the whole thing again.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say there's a couple of songs that you might want to put on your playlist and rotate them in with your other songs. This is not an album that you're going to sit down and listen to from start to finish a lot. You know, pick the good ones, pick what you want, and listen to those and be happy with those. And maybe once in a while, go back and listen to the whole album to put them all in perspective. But that's not something you really need to do.
I think really the only time you're going to go back to it is like, let's say you're doing like a Blues Brothers marathon. You're listening to all the tracks, like, and it's like, oh, I'm going to listen to each album. Yeah, you might do it. But I think that even then, you're going to be like, what a slow outro. Again, it's just like, the first few albums, like you're saying, are so good. And then this one's just kind of, eh. But that's with a lot of bands. Because, I mean, like, most bands are, like, spending the first few years, like, making these great albums. And then they're rushing the next few things because they're so popular. And then the studios are like, oh, we got to put out another album. And so it's just rush stuff, you know?
Yeah, they're so popular or they're under contract. We need to put out three albums and they have to put these albums out. They can't do what they want. They have deadlines. It's called show business for a reason. All right, well, that's it. So, Sean, once again, give us all your social media. Where can we find you? And anything particular that you're working on right now that you want to share with the audience?
You can find my collection of art from anyone and everyone at www.drawbook.net. Everything is online now. It's updated. Again, I'm still hoping to get a completely updated website because it's very outdated because I'm not a web designer myself. But you can find a lot there. You can also find all the other things I do there. You can find my music worldwide on every streaming platform at Who'd A Thunk. My latest album came out in November, Vibrations Between and Beyond. Check it out, definitely. I'm kind of on a hiatus right now with COVID, but I take photos of ceilings at The Art of Ceilings on Instagram. My podcasts are also on break while I am not receiving as much money because I try to pay my podcast guests. And so when that money comes in, then I'll bring it back up again. But they are out there. And then also come see me at Comedy Sports Houston. I'll be doing a show next week. I don't know if it'll be in time for the listeners to hear this, but you know, I'm there all the time.
We're recording this on January 9th. So Sean will have already played in his match by the time this one comes out.
It'll be my first match of the year.
Check our schedule, cschouston.com. We're performing every Saturday right now, and I'm pretty sure we're going to be going to every Friday and Saturday within the next couple of months.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's a thing. That's a good sign of things to come for 2022, as this podcast is a good thing for 2022. Because even though we didn't give this a glowing review, it's always fun doing podcasts with you, Sean, because you always bring your A game. You never phone it in, even though we are technically kind of phoning it in.
Yeah.
Literally.
But I mean, this works. I think this is a great format of just Skyping over and doing the audio. This is our fifth. This is my fifth time on your podcast, but together, our eighth podcast together.
Yes. I wouldn't have you back if I didn't think you were doing great.
I appreciate it, man. I think you're putting in the work, and it shows.
But now we're talking about stuff that's boring the audience. We're complimenting. People don't like compliments. They want us to be mean to each other. That's what somebody told me. You got to be mean to your guests. That'll get people listening. So fuck you, Sean. Fuck you for being on my podcast.
Ah, thanks, buddy. I think the fans are the ones who are listening still at this point, you know, so they want to hear these things.
All right. And please don't fuck yourself. Please keep staying the wonderful person that you are, and I'm definitely gonna have you back this year.
Yeah, definitely. We still got to do Death Wish 5.
Death Wish 5 on my other podcast, the Burt Reynolds and Charles Bronson podcast. Check that out as well.
All right, well, Scott, thanks for having me on, man.
Thanks for doing this, and we'll see everybody here next time on the Dan Aykroyd podcast. Stop.
To support this podcast, please go to www.patreon.com/ScottWhite and give what you're able. If you're listening on iTunes, please give a review. That should help people find this podcast. And no matter what services you use to listen, please leave feedback. We always want to improve. Thank you for listening to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast.
We would like to dedicate this song to a recently turbulent chunk of real estate at the end of Highway 41, just south of the Alligator Alley in the Florida Peninsula. And to a certain distinguished resident there, you may know him, Mr. Wayne Cochran. My brother Jake will sing about that town.
Going back to Miami.
Going back to Miami.
Going back to my girl.
Going back to my girl.
I said I'm going back to Miami.
Going back to Miami.
Going back to my girl.
Going back to my girl.
I've got to get back to my baby.
Across the Streams Media Podcast.